the kinds of actions we are taking are the kinds of actions that public health departments have taken for decades in response to public health challenges like epidemics. Epidemics are not new, and responses like this are not new.
Every aspect of the state's health and human service infrastructure has taken a beating during COVID. Everything. So, obviously, hopes are extremely high for the two vaccines in development. Could they be the game changer that Michigan needs right now? This is the Stateside Podcast. I'm April Baer. Let's get to what we know about these vaccines. Trials have been underway in Metro Detroit. We know that one of the two frontrunners, if it goes to market, will be produced in Michigan. So what exactly is required to do that level of mass production? Karen Bouffard is a health reporter for the Detroit News, and she's been tracking vaccine development. Karen, hi, what are you hearing?
Hello. Well, there's a lot of infrastructure that's going to be required for this, and the Operation Warp Speed at the federal level is working on putting all of that together, and the companies that are manufacturing the vaccines are also working on putting together those details. I think that the infrastructure that's required is going to depend on which vaccine we're talking about. The Pfizer vaccine has a few complications in that it needs to be stored at ultra-cold temperatures. This would be about minus 112 degrees Fahrenheit. So this requires extremely cold temperatures and in special freezers.
Is that more of an issue in the production process or in terms of the storage and logistical issues of getting it out to hospitals and clinics?
Well, the temperature is part of the storage issue, but it's also part of the distribution issue. For example, the Pfizer vaccine, they're going to be packing it in dry ice, and the facilities that receive the vaccines are going to need the capability of being able to store the vaccines in those extremely cold temperatures while they're waiting to be injected into people. The Moderna vaccine, although it is similar in that it's an mRNA-based vaccine, can be stored at normal refrigerator temperatures. And it also has a longer shelf life. You can thaw the Moderna vaccine and store it in a normal refrigerator for about 30 days. And it can even be stored at room temperature up to about 12 hours. Whereas the Pfizer vaccine has to be kept at these really cold temperatures until it's ready to be used. So they both are similar, but I think that in terms of distribution, the Moderna vaccine is going to be a little bit easier to distribute because of this temperature issue.
Karen, you write that the Pfizer vaccine, the company is projecting trying to produce 1.3 billion doses next year at two places, its Kalamazoo manufacturing operation and a plant in Belgium that will provide the European supply. Do you have any sense of where the balance of production is going to be? Is it pretty much evenly split? Can you tell?
I'm not sure because I'm not sure the number of doses that will be needed in Europe as opposed to the United States. That would be an issue of population, and I don't have those numbers handy. However, I can tell you that the Kalamazoo plant is going to be producing all of the vaccine for U.S. consumption, and the European facility is going to be producing the vaccine for Europe.
Do you know if Pfizer is going to have to radically expand its facilities to get this done?
Well, it's already been expanding the facility in Kalamazoo. I believe it was about nearly $90 million that it invested already this year, early in the year, when they started working on a vaccine as early as the beginning of January. So they've actually been designing and manufacturing some of their own equipment. And they installed a freezer farm on that Kalamazoo property with 350 ultra cold freezers. So they've had to develop all kinds of new technologies for the storage and manufacture of their vaccine.
Now I'm starting to wonder if there are enough cold storage trucks in the United States to handle sending this out all over the country. I'm sure that's on Pfizer's mind as well.
Right. That's a very good question. I know that the state of Michigan has developed a plan for distribution of a vaccine with the requirements of Pfizer's vaccine or other kinds of vaccines in mind. So one of the things that it says in Michigan's distribution plan is that the vaccines are going to have to be couriered. They're not going to be delivered by just UPS or US Postal Service, something like that. So but I think one thing to keep in mind, though, is that these are just the first two vaccines. There are other kinds of vaccines that are going to be coming out very, very shortly. There's a whole kind of pipeline of vaccines in development, and they're not all going to require this cold storage.
Can you remind us who decides how the vaccines will be distributed throughout the U.S.?
Each state, per the CDC, has written its own distribution plan. Michigan has its own distribution plan, but companies are going to also make different choices about how they sort of launch the process or enter the supply chain. I know that Operation Warp Speed at a federal level is working on distribution plans and will have different mechanisms set up for supply chain, but companies aren't necessarily going to use that. I understand that Pfizer has its own distribution plan and isn't necessarily going to hop on the, you know, the federal wagon in terms of how it distributes its product.
What's next in the regulatory process?
Both companies, meaning Pfizer and Moderna, are preparing to send documentation to the Food and Drug Administration. I'm waiting for that to happen just about any day with Pfizer. Moderna said that they are currently preparing documentation. So, you know, they could be following very closely on the heels of Pfizer in terms of applying for emergency use authorization. The emergency use authorization would be a decision by the FDA to allow the companies to distribute and release their vaccines without full FDA approval based on the data that they have currently from their phase 3 clinical trials. So basically what the FDA is saying is at a certain point, you are going to have enough data to submit to us for emergency use authorization, but not necessarily for full FDA approval. But because of the overwhelming need for these products, we're going to allow them to be distributed.
Karen Bouffard is a Health Beat reporter at the Detroit News. Karen, thank you so much.
Thank you, April. It was my pleasure.
Amid all this, the head of Michigan's Department of Health and Human Services is taking a leave. He's going to go help out with the Biden team's transition. He'll tell us why after a short break. We'll be right back.
Support for the Stateside Podcast comes from the University of Michigan's Go Blue Guarantee, committed to keeping a U of M undergraduate education within reach of all Michigan residents, regardless of socioeconomic status. Programs are available for all three campuses. More at goblueguarantee.umich.edu.
It has been a crazy year for a lot of people, but Robert Gordon's 2020 stands out. As head of Michigan's Department of Health and Human Services, he's had to manage epidemic orders, safety plans for schools, and a thousand other things that need attention because of COVID. Now Washington's calling. Gordon's going to be co-leader on Joe Biden's transition team for the federal Department of Health and Human Services. We wanted to catch up with him for a few minutes before he literally stops sleeping. Director Gordon, thanks for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
I know that you are not able to talk about the work that you'll be doing for Joe Biden's transition team, but I did want to ask, can you tell us why you thought this was an important thing to be doing right now?
Yeah, it was a chance to share our experiences, successes, and challenges in Michigan with the response to COVID, and also to give policymakers in Washington a chance to better understand what states really need right now, including Michigan, first and foremost.
It feels like there's not a single aspect of Michigan DHHS's business that has not been affected by the pandemic. Is that true?
That is true. It is a challenge across the entire department.
So what are your top priorities at this stage?
Our highest priority is to encourage all Michiganders to cut back on indoor gatherings. We know that COVID spreads when people gather indoors with people from outside of their families, even friends, even loved ones. And on Sunday night, we issued an order that closed public settings where folks gather indoors. But just as important beyond the order is that each of us individually make a decision, even in our own homes, to cut back on those indoor gatherings outside the family. If we can all do that, it will be the most important thing to bring COVID back under control.
DHHS stepped in after Governor Whitmer's initial lockdown orders were challenged in court, and your department has been the engine that has been issuing guidance and, in some cases, outright rules for things like how people can congregate, how business can be done. I haven't been aware of any legal challenges, but has there been anything going on? Has the department met any legal resistance to its rules and guidance at this point?
Yeah, there's some lawsuits making their way through the courts. We are acting under a legal authority that the Michigan legislature gave to the governor years ago after the Spanish flu. And the kinds of actions we are taking are the kinds of actions that public health departments have taken for decades in response to public health challenges like epidemics. Epidemics are not new, and responses like this are not new.
How would you rate, generally speaking, Michigan's level of compliance among businesses and private citizens? We hear a lot about people who resist these rules, but what would you say is the general picture of whether Michiganders are complying?
I think we had incredible compliance in the spring, and it is the central reason that Michigan brought infections and deaths down to a greater degree, I believe, than any other state. I think as time has gone on, it has been more challenging here, as it's been more challenging everywhere. Everyone is exhausted, I will tell you, as you said. I personally and my family and my kids are exhausted. But this is like a five-alarm fire for our state. Each of us personally has a chance to save lives. We have a chance to be like that firefighter who goes into the building and through our actions to save literally thousands of lives. It is not an exaggeration what the stakes are right now. So we are really asking everyone to step up.
Yeah. You mentioned the exhaustion and the fact that even your family is not immune to this. What are you telling your kids about sticking it out at this time?
I'm telling them to be forgiving of themselves, to be forgiving of me as a dad. I'm being a little more easygoing about Fortnite than I would be normally. And I'm telling them that this will end and we will get to the other side. And I think that they are learning about perseverance and contribution and sacrifice in ways that I think will help them, much as they are suffering and we are all suffering now, will help them be better, stronger people in the long run.
Mm-hmm. What can you tell us about Michigan's access to testing?
Michigan has done really well on access to testing. We have, I believe, currently more than 50,000 tests a day in Michigan. We are in the top five states nationally per capita. It was not like that initially. We had to work very hard to get testing up, and we did. And it was a team effort, not just the state, but hospitals, universities, community health centers around the state, working together with faith-based leaders, with local doctor's offices, with urgent cares, with pharmacies. We have really expanded greatly access to testing. We continue to have a challenge with turnaround times, but you know that is something where we are actually, compared to a lot of states, doing relatively well.
Are there other aspects of DHHS's business, maybe what's going on in Michigan's hospitals, that are still keeping you awake at night?
Yeah, there's a lot of things that keep me awake at night. Contact tracing is really struggling right now because of the number of cases. We are working hard to prioritize the cases that matter most. I guess one thing I want to say is the work that local public health departments are doing and the work that department staff are doing right now is just extraordinary. There are hundreds or thousands of people across Michigan. You don't know their names. They are working around the clock and saving lives. And I personally just feel enormous honor and sense of respect as I work alongside all of those folks.
We get the sense, talking to especially health departments, maybe in the UP or smaller towns, that mandates and rules carry a bit less weight than they might in places like Detroit or Oakland County or Grand Rapids or Ann Arbor. Are there ways in which DHHS has modified its messaging as well?
Yeah, I think we want to speak to people in language that resonates with them. We have changed our communications. For example, we did a public service announcement not long ago where the featured speakers were all veterans and they were all putting on masks with American flags on them. And they were talking about how this was a form of service, just like the service thing, not just like, but it was a form of service to our country and to their community. And I personally deeply believe that. I will say, when it comes to the question of requirements, there's a lot of evidence on this at this point. If you look at places in the United States or elsewhere that have not responded with public action, they have not been able to get the virus under control. And you're seeing that in states right now, and it is tragic. And if you look at Western Europe, where they had growth very similar to ours, those countries responded much as Michigan did, Governor Whitmer did on Sunday night, not with a lockdown, but with targeted and temporary measures. And those states, those countries have seen a turn. It's not to say it's over, but they have seen a turn. And because of what they did, they are closer to being able to reopen safely, as opposed to feeling that they are in an endless dark tunnel. So it's getting out of that tunnel is the reason that we are doing what we're doing.
You know, at the same time, there are people in many places in Michigan who have lost loved ones to COVID and who are dealing with all the realities of the disease in this year, who look at the public face of Michigan's response, and they're very frustrated. And they can't understand, you know, they can't understand why there isn't some sort of mandate or whether there's some way that they can get through to people. How do you hold the two realities of Michigan's COVID experience in your head at the same time?
It's a really hard question. I think we obviously try to remember. I'm someone who thinks and talks a lot in terms of numbers, but I try always to remember that behind every number is a name and a human being. Every lost life was a unique life. It was a sacred life. It was someone's loved one. And in our everyday work outside of times like this, we think of ourselves. And in our everyday lives, not just as the health department, but all of us, we would say if we had the opportunity to save one life, that would be an extraordinary privilege and responsibility. And we are at a moment when we as a society have an opportunity to save thousands of lives. And so to think of both the opportunity and responsibility that that entails is a very great burden, but it also is inspiring because it is a moment when we all can act and we all can make an incredible difference. And so I try to focus on that every day, and I hope that all of us will.
Robert Gordon is director of Michigan's Department of Health and Human Services. Director Gordon, thank you.
Thanks for having me.
And that's the Stateside Podcast for today. I'm April Baer. You can find the full Stateside show for your streaming enjoyment at michiganradio.org. Our executive producer is Laura Weber Davis. Today's show was produced by Mercedes Mejia with help from Jen Guerra. Our theme music is by 14KT, additional music by Blue Dot Sessions. Thanks so much for listening. We'll see you tomorrow.